Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans, not just in Canada or Calgary, Alberta, but around the world. If you're hearing my voice, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start off this episode with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. A minor, or what I would call a major driver signing, Alex Albon has signed another multi-year contract with Williams Racing. I think this is a good idea for Williams. I think this is a good idea for Alex. Although I do think he didn't really have much of a choice. Now by that, I mean Williams or Albon is a good driver. He knows what he's doing. He is seasoned and he is consistent. But he hasn't shown the championship consistency that other teams are looking for. And you don't want to go down to Kick. In my opinion, if Albon was to sign with Kick Salba instead of Williams, it would be a step down for him, definitely, at least for a couple years until Audi gets their feet underneath them and they start to potentially win races. I think Albon is the career driver for Williams. Now, whether you consider that a good thing or if you consider that a bad thing, at least for him, it's super consistent. And at least for Williams, they know what kind of driver they're getting. He's developed very well over the last couple of years. He's helped the development of the car. He helps the development of the team in general. It's a familiar setting for everybody. They know what each other is going to do, what they're going to say. It's a very symbiotic relationship. I think it's a good thing all around. Congratulations, Alex. It's hopefully this is the start of the driver signing season, because with Albon signing at Williams, I mean, he still has an empty seat beside him. Logan Sargeant still hasn't signed any kind of contract, nor do I actually think that Williams will sign Alex Albon or Logan Sargeant. Well, apparently I just can't get the names right today. I don't think Sargeant's going to get re-signed with Williams. I think this will be his last season in Formula One, at least for the foreseeable future. Mainly for the fact that Logan Sargeant, he was consistent with his rookie year and not consistently bad or consistently good. He was just consistent. He showed that for a rookie, he knew what he was supposed to do. He followed instructions and he made a little bit of gains here and there when he could. He's no longer a rookie, and Williams isn't exactly a massive, to be polite, Williams is not a shitbox. They've got the upgrades. They've got the car. They've got the system in place. It's Logan Sargeant that is proving to be the non-reliable part in this relationship. He is reliably last. He cannot get out of the bottom five. If he does, he doesn't know what to do. It was a bad fit for Williams. They tried something new. They didn't really like what they saw. I don't think they're going to re-sign Sargeant. I don't think any other team is going to pick up Sargeant either. So Williams needs another driver. Well, this weekend in Imola, it was reported and it was, fact-checked that Valtteri Bottas was seen coming out of the Williams, not garage, but like their hospitality area for the team. He was in there for about 20, 25 minutes. It was rumored and he kind of verified that he had a meeting with Williams. Now, no other details have been forthcoming. They don't know if he's signed, if he's intending on signing, how interested Williams is. If Bottas is too expensive, however you want to look at it, but he did definitely have an official sit-down meeting with Williams. Is this a good signing for Williams? 100%. Williams needs that big name moving forward, not just to help the new drivers, but to elevate the team, bring in some sponsors, think outside the box. Now, although it's Valtteri Bottas, he's got the experience. He's got the experience as a wingman. He doesn't really have the experience of winning championships, of winning multiple races. He is that driver that you come in, that comes in when you don't really have another choice. Is he the best fit for Williams as of right now? And especially for the drivers that are open to the market? Yes, absolutely he is. Is this the best career step for him? No. I don't think it's a step up for him going from Kick to Williams. That's great. If he goes there, I'm not saying that he is, but if he does go there, it is a step up for him. But what I think we're witnessing now with Valtteri Bottas is he's going to drive wherever a team will take him. So it's that slow veteran driver decline where he's going to hang around. He's going to help develop, but he's not really going to be in the headlines. He's still not going to be in the top five or the top 10. The Williams car is much more consistent than the Kick Sauber car. Granted, no one can argue with that one at all. Maybe this gives him a little bit of boost to be in the top 10. Maybe this helps him hang around for another year or so at max. I don't see this being an absolutely long-term signing for either teams if this does happen. I think this is just one of those really slow adieu exit kind of things. I hope it works out for him. I hope it actually happens. I would love to see Bottas stay around, even if it is in a Williams car, because, I mean, they're not the most horrible car out there. I just think it's that really slow decline that, hopefully it's a good thing for him. Well, let's talk about the driver signings for a minute. Let's talk about the teams and which teams actually still need drivers. Well, Red Bull needs a driver. Another one. Aston Martin does. Williams does. Kick does. Mercedes does. Alpine needs two drivers. V-Car needs two drivers. Haas needs two drivers. Now, what I mean by that is obviously these teams actually have drivers for the 2024 season. But all of these teams either have no driver signed for 2025 moving forward, or they only have one driver signed for the 2025 season. This brings in a massive opportunity for guys that are in the wings, that have been traveling with the teams or the replacement drivers, that they actually get to have a chance, a shot at something. Perfect example, Liam Lawson. Liam Lawson's been in the shadow for about a year and a half. He got to drive a couple races when Danny Ric was out. He scored points on his first drive. Super consistent, very exciting for a rookie. Does he have the staying power? From the five or six races that we saw, yeah, I do believe that he does. But when and where will he get the chance? Well, Liam Lawson is, I don't want to say related, but he's connected to VCAR. And both Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo both don't have contracts signed for the 2025 season. At this point, it's driver versus driver, because I don't think they're going to sign both drivers for the 25 season. Whichever driver comes out on top, whether it's Yuki or Danny Ric, I believe that they will keep their seat. The other person is out of a job. Then Liam Lawson's going to come in, take that seat. V-Carb's going to be full. Okay, so theoretically, in conversation sake, let's say Danny Ric doesn't make it. Where does he go? He can absolutely go to Alpine, because neither Pierre Gasly or Esteban Ocon have contracts signed past 2024. He could go to Haas, because neither of those guys have their contracts signed past 2025. Oh, but wait, Nico Hülkenberg does, but he's going to Kick. So now all of a sudden, does K-Mag stay? Does K-Mag go? Kevin Magnussen in his performance this year is, I mean, if you say lackluster, you're being polite. He only needs two more points on his supercar license to get a full race ban. This doesn't happen very often, and when it does, it's kind of it's self-inflicted. It's imploding. The driver himself, he's just not, K-Mag's not having a good season. So Haas, rightfully so, has not signed him yet. If you look at Red Bull, obviously Max Verstappen until 2028, they still haven't signed Carlos Sainz yet, or they still haven't signed Checo Perez. Ferrari, obviously, they've got two drivers. Carlos Sainz doesn't have a seat yet. So is he going to go to Red Bull? Is he going to go to Aston Martin? Because Fernando Alonso has signed a multi-year contract extension with Aston Martin, and the owner's kid, Lance Stroll, he hasn't signed one yet. I don't think he's going to sign either. I think his welcome has been severely worn out in his daddy's team. He's helping a little bit now compared to a couple seasons ago, but I think it's, you know, one or two seasons too late. Williams has Alex Albon. He signed a multi-year contract, like we noted at the top of the show, but they don't have another driver. They haven't signed Logan Sargeant, nor will they sign Logan Sargeant, in my opinion. Kick Sauber, they've signed Nico Hülkenberg, which means either Valtteri Bottas or Joe Guan Yu doesn't have a seat. So now, where do you go? Like I said before, Bottas has been shopping around. He went to go see Williams. Maybe he goes to Alpine. He's got a couple of choices. In my opinion, a couple of these cars are definitely a step up from Kick Sauber, but I mean, this market is saturated with veterans who want to stay and rookies that want to come in. Mercedes, you know, they've got one driver. That would be the most attractive team, in my opinion, realistically, for most drivers. George Russell has stayed. He's got another contract. I think his contract's up in either 25 or 26. Obviously, Lewis Hamilton is going to Ferrari, so that opens up that seat as well. Alpine, like I said, neither of those guys have their contract. V-Carb, same with them. And Haas, well, one driver's already left. So what do you do with all these guys? What do you do with all these empty seats? Do you, as an owner, as a team, do you look to recycle another driver from another team? Do you look to sign your drivers that, I mean, there's a reason why you don't have a contract yet. They're not the best anymore, but they're also not the worst. Do you just settle for a middle-of-the-road type driver with middle-of-the-road type point expectations and performance and just kind of stay where you are for a season or two and see if, you know, the next Ayrton Senna comes up through the juniors or the next Max Verstappen or the next Lewis Hamilton? Do you take that time? Do you be that patient and hope that your sponsors, you know, understand what you're doing? Or do you make a knee-jerk reaction and sign one out of the two drivers and hope to get a big fish? The big fish right now, in my opinion, is Carlos Sainz. He can go literally wherever he wants, except for home. Ferrari doesn't want him. Everybody else will take him. Realistically, and I mean, like, think about this. Take a minute, write it down. Realistically, where do you think Carlos Sainz is going to go? Is he going to waste a year in Kicksalba until Audi comes in? Because Audi's pushing hard. They're pushing hard for Carlos Sainz. The only thing with that is they're only giving him a 2-year contract with some stipulations in there. Does he want to be there for that long? Does he want to be there longer? Right? Mercedes is offering him a 1-year contract. And rumors are flying that after this Imola weekend that Carlos Sainz is no longer in the Mercedes radar. If Mercedes and Toto Wolff are so nitpicky that, oh, he had a bad weekend, we're not going to take him, you deserve to be mid-grade now. You absolutely do. If you want to pass up that kind of talent just because of one weekend, or you don't think he's going to be at the Mercedes level performance, guys, your team is going downhill extraordinarily slowly. You're losing aerodynamic directors. You've lost your driver. You're losing staff like there's no tomorrow. So I wouldn't be that picky if I were you, if I were Mercedes. Red Bull, they can pick whoever they want. Will they pick up Perez? I don't know. Will they pick up Carlos Sainz? It's time. Time will tell. This offseason or this midseason signing frenzy, I'm going to call it, is going to be one to remember for a very, very long time. Some teams are definitely going to win. Some teams are definitely going to lose in these situations. And speaking of winning and losing teams, that kind of leads me into the last section of our hot topics, because it is Imola. This means that this is the beginning of the major upgrade season frenzy, however you want to call it. Most teams will pull up their major upgrades as of right now. They will also continue to bring new upgrades out throughout the season. So let's take a look at some of the teams and what they've brought as far as upgrades and how many upgrades are brought in. Let's start with Red Bull. Red Bull brings in 5 upgrades: the floor edge, the front wing, rear corner, the floor body, and the nose. All of these guys are, most of them, 4 out of the 5 are just performance upgrades. The rear corner is a very track specific upgrade. This track has a tendency to have an overload on the front tires. So if you curve the body, it's a little bit easier on the tires. I mean, not a whole lot, but just enough that you're going to keep that tire degradation from being too bad. It's Red Bull. Their upgrades are known for being on point, and we're going to see how well this works out. Ferrari, you are looking at 7 upgrades for Imola this weekend. Let's get right into it. Front wing, rear wing, side pod inlet, diffuser, floor edge, rear suspension, and the engine cover. All of this is performance based. All of this Ferrari already had in the works. It's one of their home races. It is the home race. So why not take the opportunity, do the research, do the development, and bring it out during the home race? It looks fantastic. If you look at the car before the upgrades and you look at the car after the upgrades, in my opinion, it looks a little boxier, but in a very sleek way, if that makes sense. And I think the visual concept of it is the engine cover. They call it the Coke bottle cover for most of the engines, just because it goes from thin to wide to a little bit thin and wide again, just like an old school Coke bottle, like the glass ones used to do. So that it's a very impressive upgrade. With HP coming in as the new sponsorship, they got an infusion of money, a couple of guys thinking outside the boxes. What can we do? Here's what they've done. How well will they use it? Mercedes bringing in 5 upgrades this weekend. We've got floor fencing. We've got floor body. Those are the only 2 actual performance-based. So again, that means these were in development already before this race. And the 3 circuit-specific modifications they've done is the rear wing, the beam wing, and again, the front corner. Just because of the load on the tires and just because the way that this track is set up, there's not a whole lot of places to pass. So you don't need a whole lot more downspeed or downforce, but you do need that agility to get around the corners and not lose a whole lot of speed. McLaren only brought in 2 upgrades this season, both of them very track specific, rear wing and beam wing. Again, same idea as the Mercedes, so we don't need to go into that big detail. Alpine only brought in 1. It is the floor edge. Again, this is an upgrade that they were planning on bringing in. The reason why they brought in just the floor edge is that the stability for the Alpine has been pretty good. They've been losing a little bit of downforce and a little bit of track speed around the corners, and their straight line speed has been pretty good. It's been consistent. So they're just tweaking the floor edge to give them just that little bit more, a little bit more speed. They're also going to reduce the deflection of the high speed corners, improving airflow around the rear tires. So it's kind of it sounds complicated, but it's a pretty basic upgrade when it comes to F1 cars. Let's see if it actually works. The big guys, the big boys pulling out the most amount of upgrades, Aston Martin. They're bringing out 9 upgrades. Almost, in my opinion, an entirely new car. Let's get into it. Front wing, nose, the floor body, the floor fence, the floor edge, the diffuser, the engine cover, the rear suspension, and the rear corner. All of these are performance-based. They knew Imola was coming. They also know that the Aston Martin, their Formula One car, is not exactly the, we'll call it the daintiest car to bring around the track. They need to lose some weight. They need to find some speed. They also need to find some downforce. This is what all of these improvements will do. It's a bigger upgrade than Ferrari, but is it going to be as useful as an upgrade as Ferrari? Ferrari has a tendency to go a couple small ones and then one really big reveal. And the upgrades for them seem to be the most consistent when Ferrari does that. Aston Martin's going for the swing for the fences. If it doesn't work, then let's just replace the whole damn thing. We're going to see how well that works out for them. Williams, 1 upgrade as well. They have upgraded the floor body, and this is just for reliability. They have found that every time they run off track, which apparently lately has been quite often, it's a super fragile bottom. It's a very, very fragile floor body. So what they've done essentially, if they just kind of beefed it up a little bit, they've changed some of the corners. They've also made sure that it's lighter than the last one, which makes it a little bit more flexible. So they've beefed it up. They've made it more reliable, but they've also made it lighter so it can withstand a little bit more jostling, so it doesn't absolutely trash the speed as it does last time, or did last time. Kicksalba, floor fences for them. Is this going to help them any? It's an aerodynamic issue for them, for the car. Is it going to be majorly performance-wise, performance-based? We hope it works for them. The floor fencing, again, it's just going to move the air around the car, over the tires, make it just a little bit more streamlined. And then our last but not least is Haas. They bring in 3 upgrades. They're bringing in the rear corner, the rear suspension, and the front wing end plate. So that's where you're generally going to see the logo. Again, all of these are performance-based. So hopefully Haas can find that, not just qualifying speed, but they can actually find racing speed. As of late, Nico Hülkenberg is at the top of the sheets when it comes to qualifying. He will be first after Q2. He is making the top 10 for Q3, if not the top 5, which is amazing. So Haas has got that qualifying speed. They don't necessarily have the race speed just because it's over a longer distance, hence the new upgrades. They're hoping for that little bit of little bit longer life in the actual race, that they'll be able to keep the qualifying speed for longer and get more points, so they're not close to the basement this year in the Constructors' Championship. And folks, that is all. That's it for Hot Topics. That's everything you need to know in the world of F1. Let's move right into qualifying. Imola, the Italian Grand Prix. Fantastic weather. So, for those of you who don't know, this is the first time we've been back since 2022. So 2023, the Imola Grand Prix was set to take place. They had a massive rainstorm. There was a huge amount of flooding. Not only did it flood the track, it flooded the actual town of Imola as well. Massive damage. So they ended up canceling the race due to safety. A lot of F1 teams stayed behind, helped out with the recovery, helped out with the salvaging, just helped out the town as much as they possibly could. This year, drastically different. Fantastic weather, not a cloud in the sky. A little windy around some of the corners, though, mainly 16 through 19. This is making these guys go off track a little bit. But a lot of these guys, they love the track. There's a few guys here who've never driven the track. Logan Sargeant's one. Oscar Piastri's the other one. Joe Guan Yu as well. None of these guys have, they've never driven Imola. So we're going to see how well, they do in qualifying. Q1, out of the gate, the first thing that I noticed that maybe you guys noticed as well, Fernando Alonso, with all these upgrades on this car, you would think they would have a ton of practice time with these upgrades just in the simulator, right? You see the wind tunnel numbers, you see the simulator numbers, some simulator time. It just seemed like Alonso was just fighting the car all weekend long. He hit the gravel twice during free practice. He hit the wall in free practice 3. He's hitting the gravel again when it comes to qualifying. The wind was a little gusty, but it wasn't horrible. But it seemed so much worse in that Aston Martin. It was not Fernando Alonso's day. Hopefully they can get that figured out for the actual race. He was not a happy camper. He accepted it as well as Fernando Alonso can. He is understanding of why it's happening because he's Fernando Alonso. And he's done this, once or twice. But it doesn't make it any easier. You put in 7 upgrades for your car. They're supposed to be all aerodynamic. They're supposed to be all for performance. And yet you end up going in the gravel more often than not. It's not a good qualifying for Fernando Alonso. Also, Williams, not exactly a great qualifying either. They end up going out late. They had repairs on the car that they needed to do. Again, Logan Sargeant hit the gravel. Alex Albon hit the gravel. So they were rushing for time to get the cars out. Thankfully, both cars did make it out for qualifying 1. And they did not too bad. Logan Sargeant, spoiler alert, wasn't last this time in qualifying. Also, he didn't make it out of Q1, but he also wasn't last. So the 5 drivers that were eliminated from Q1, 16 down to 20 in order. Valtteri Bottas was 16th. Logan Sargeant was 17th. Joe Guan Yu was 18th. Kevin Magnussen 19th. And Fernando Alonso in 20th. In my opinion, the only actual surprise name there would be Fernando Alonso just because he was fighting the car so much. Kicksalba, they're trying, but another lackluster performance from them. They're moving in the right direction. They're just not moving fast enough. If they were in probably F2, they would be in the top 3 teams, top 5 teams easily. But because the rest of the group has brought in better upgrades, they're just a naturally faster car. They're kind of just hanging on to for dear life, and they're there to show up, but they're not exactly there to pressure anybody. Q2, again, weather was fantastic. A little bit of surprise in Q2. From my opinion, the main surprise one is Yuki Tsunoda. By the end of Q2, he was second. He had the second fastest lap time. So whatever V car, Visa Cash App, whatever you want to call them, Red Bull 2.0, whatever they've ended up doing for upgrades, for tweaks for Yuki Tsunoda, it's fantastic. He was just cruising around that track, one turn per corner, no overcorrection, no oversteer, no understeer. It was just great to see that he was in the zone. He was just going like there's no tomorrow. Oscar Piastri, he's going to get hit with a penalty. He absolutely is going to get hit with a obstruction penalty. He essentially was the reason why some drivers almost didn't make it into Q3. And they had to do an extra lap. He cuts off Nico Hülkenberg. He saw him coming. But by the time he was notified that he was there, it was way too late from his team. Ended up slowing him right down. Nico did make it out of Q2, spoiler alert, but he didn't exactly place as high as he wanted to just because of the bad driving from Oscar Piastri. I know I said his team told him he was late coming, or they told him late that Nico was coming. But at the same time, you do still have mirrors on that car. I think it's getting a little old that the drivers are blaming their engineers that another car, you didn't tell me the car was coming up. I understand that you have a lot of things going on. Well, as much as a viewer can understand, you've got the steering wheel, you've got, you know, how complicated that is. You got other drivers, you're paying attention to what you're doing on the track, but you still have rear view mirrors for a purpose. You got to start using them. You got to take a little bit more responsibility going, hey, I didn't know. I didn't see. That's my bad. It's not necessarily the team's fault. This is my fault. So I see the blame game shifting a little bit heavier to the drivers and people just accepting the blame game on the team instead of the driver themselves. Do I think it's right? Nah, not really. Was it Oscar Piastri's fault? Yeah, I kind of do. He was the one driving the car. He was the one that got in the way. So expect at least a 2-place grid penalty for Oscar Piastri by the time qualifying is done. Besides that, super clean qualifying. No other drama. Some cars are not pushing it as fast as they need to. Perez, I'm looking at you. We're 7 races in. You don't have a contract. You want to stay with Red Bull, right? You want to stay winning. You want to get points, right? So you need to push it a little bit harder, in my opinion. You were trying. It looked like you were. You just didn't look like you were trying that hard. It almost felt like you didn't quite know what the timing sheet was, or you felt a lot more comfortable than you were or than you should have been by the time Q2 was done, because the big name out in Q2 was Checo Perez. He got eliminated by, I think it was none other than Nico Hülkenberg, by 15/1000ths of a second, 0.015 seconds. At that point, you need to, yes, it's close. Yes, it's super close and very unexpected. But if you put yourself in a situation where you have the potential to get knocked out from, and let's be honest, we've got 2 V cars, you've got 1 Haas now in the top 10, and then everybody else, you deserve to be kicked out. You are taking Haas and V car very, very lightly when it comes to qualifying. It's not race pace. It's not full weight. These guys can qualify very, very well. Do they race well? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But never count them out when it comes to qualifying. So, Checo Perez, you got what you deserved, in my opinion. You need to pay attention more. You need to want it more. You need to push it. So, from 11th to 15th in Q2, here it is in order. Checo Perez in 11th, Esteban Ocon in 12th, Lance Stroll in 13th, Alex Albon in 14th, and Pierre Gasly in 15th. It's nice to see Albon all the way up to 14th. He qualifies generally in that area between 14th and 11th. I would love to see a new upgrade, more upgrades for the Williams car, actually get him into Q3. I think he would do wonders. Everybody else, not really a surprise, except for Checo, but Alpine is where they generally are. And I, in my opinion, need to be in the, 11th to 15th range. Lance Stroll, nice surprise for him up in 13th. A lot more consistent than he has been since last year and the beginning of this season. It's like he knows he actually needs to try now. The car is suiting him a little bit better. It seems a little bit less daunting for him to get around the track week in and week out. Alex Albon, like I said, generally where he is, so no real surprises in Q2. Q3, the big boys are out. Here it goes. The main story for me for Q3, and I've kind of buried the lead until we get to this one, just qualifying in general, is every other season for the last couple of seasons, you would expect that, Max is the top at Q1, Q2, he's going to win Q3. Practice, obviously, he's killing it there. Red Bull's there. They're always there. If you watch practice and then you watch the qualifying into the race, you're going to notice something not quite particular or peculiar, but something a little different than what you're normally used to, is that you're actually having to see Max Verstappen try. And by that, I mean, the RB20 is in the sweet spot, but it's not in the sweet spot. The team is having to work a little bit harder to get this car ready week in and week out. Now, the raw performance and the raw speed of the RB20 is amazing. It's still top notch. It is still one of the fastest, if not the fastest car on the straightaway. But performance-wise, when it comes track to track, Max is having to work a little bit harder than what he's used to, which means the development that they've done or what they didn't do last season for this season is starting to catch up to them. Yes, they developed this car quite early in 2023 just because they knew they were going to win the season. But when it comes to the upgrades that they're putting on now and where the car started at the beginning of the season, it's not quite in the sweet spot where they needed to be. This is the perfect example. Max was struggling in practice one, practice two, and practice three. He was not at the top. He was top five, but he wasn't the top of the grid. At some point, he was barely top 10 for speed for track time. So they're really having to work at it. Q1, Q2, he didn't top them. Again, he was top five, which that's where you expect a Red Bull team to be, but he wasn't the very, very top of the list. And if he was top for a little bit, it wasn't by a whole lot. Going into Q3, you can see Max get a little bit more comfortable with the track. He is getting faster and faster, and he's feeling more comfortable in the car, especially around this track with the windy conditions that are starting to pop up. But is this going to be enough for Q3? Because as I've seen it at the beginning of the season, as I've called it and I will continue to call it, McLaren is right on the tail of that Red Bull. The upgrades they've brought in, although it wasn't a lot of upgrades, they are very, very specific and they're working very, very well. All of a sudden, Max is getting a lot of pressure from Piastri and from Norris. It's not coming from Mercedes this season. It sure as hell ain't coming from Ferrari this season. It will be coming from McLaren, which made Q3 extraordinarily interesting. Now, keeping in mind that Oscar Piastri still has to get his grid place penalty, I'm saying it's going to be a two place just because of the situation. And it wasn't dangerous driving. It was just dumb driving. And he's going to get penalized for it. As always in Q3, Ferrari's in there like a dirty shirt. Mercedes is in there like a dirty shirt. We got three new players when it comes to the top 10. We've got Hülkenberg, Ricciardo, and Yuki Tsunoda. Both Yuki Tsunoda and Danny Ric, whatever they've done to this car this weekend, they need to continue to do it. Their qualifying pace and consistency of the car itself looked fantastic. No drama whatsoever. These guys were just going fast in good, clean weather. Let's get into the top 10. I know this is what you've been waiting for. I know I built it up, but no surprise, Max Verstappen ends up getting first. Oscar Piastri is second. Norris is third. Leclerc is fourth. Sainz is fifth. Russell in sixth. Yuki Tsunoda, top 10 easily. He's in seventh. Hamilton in eighth. Danny Ric in ninth. And Nico Hülkenberg in 10th. Where did that qualifying speed go that Nico had in Q1 and Q2? Well, it's not that he lost it, in my opinion. It's that the other teams definitely found it. They are going. It's Q3. The track is where it needs to be. These guys remember the track. They found the little nuances here and there, and it's just time to go. The penalty did come out for Oscar Piastri. It is a two-place grid penalty, so he will be starting. Actually, sorry, it was a three-place grid penalty for this. He'll be starting the race in fifth, which means Sainz, Leclerc, Norris all bump up at least one spot. So Norris behind Max for the beginning of the race. This is the new Hamilton versus Max Verstappen. Not as epic as it was when those other two guys, when Hamilton was in there, but at the same time, he is giving Max pressure that no one else on the grid can right now. That car is just, oof, that McLaren is on rails. That McLaren is a rocket ship. Same with the Red Bull. Even with the new upgrades, it doesn't look like it's helping too much, but they haven't exactly had a whole lot of time to develop and practice. With Max Verstappen getting the pole, he officially ties Ayrton Senna for the most poles in a row at eight. So eight consecutive poles in a row is tying an F1 record. I expect by next race that he will have broken the record and then his record will stop. I don't see Max getting pole every single weekend for 24 races. It's just not possible. I don't think it's going to happen, especially for where Red Bull is for car development. I do think it is going to end, but I also do think that Max Verstappen will break Ayrton Senna's all-time F1 record. Some people like this idea. Some people don't like this idea of this record being broken. People view Ayrton Senna as the god of Formula One. His performance on track, off track, people loved him. He did die on this track 30 years ago, so it was the anniversary. But records are meant to be broken. Now, whether you like Max Verstappen or not, whether you like Red Bull or not, he is a fantastic driver. And if he is going to break this record, a lot of people are going to love him for it, but also a lot of people are going to hate him for it as well. Qualifying is done. Practice is done. All the drama is done. The penalties are dished out and we have an opening grid. Everybody is in the spot they need to be, which can only mean one thing. It is race day. It is the Imola Grand Prix. 63 laps, 19 turns, 359 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap from Lewis Hamilton, 1 minute 15 seconds in 2020. Lap distance of 4.9 kilometers. The thing about this track is it, in my opinion, it is a cross between a modern track and Monaco. Now, Monaco is one of the oldest tracks on the Grand Prix circuit in Formula One, which means Monaco, if you don't know, is very, very unforgiving. You can go a little wide off the corners, but there's no massive runoff areas. That also means there's not exactly a whole lot of places to pass. The best place to pass is going to be on the straight into corner one and into three at the best, which generally means the beginning of the race, it's going to be a massive cluster of cars going into one corner, trying to outbest everybody. There has been a history of massive crashes, mayhem, destruction, a lot of cars out, a lot of, you know, unintentional bumping, a lot of intentional elbows out. So we're going to see how this race goes. Five lights, away we go. And absolutely for nice to see, it was fantastic to see this. Not a single problem on the opening lap. It was fantastic. Everybody scooted in where they needed to be. Max started first. He also kept his first, Lando Norris, right behind him, as you knew he was going to be. A couple of places lost for Checo Perez, a couple of places lost for Oscar Piastri. But generally, it was a super, super good, fast start to this race. No drama, which is nice to see, because this is a type of track where you need that consistency. If it's a stop and go, it can really make this a very painful race to watch for us at home. Not exactly the latest or earliest. It was about a 7 a.m. race. So just, you know, just entertaining enough to keep us awake. Massive wind problems, corner 16 through 18 on this race day. A lot of cars are taking those corners. They're going really, really wide. Some of them made it into the gravel, a couple tires off. Nobody ends up hitting the wall, which is fantastic. Generally, when you see the kind of wind gusts that happen at Imola, even if you are the most seasoned driver, paying attention, rookie, good weather, bad weather, it does have a tendency to blow some cars off the track and into the wall. Red flag, yellow flag, all that kind of fun stuff. Not today. It was great. Everybody was in their place where they needed to be. The thing that you're going to notice about this race, it's like Monaco, like I said before, also in a way that it's a DRS train. Now, for those of you who don't know what a DRS train is, you get DRS, which is the drag reduction system, if you are within 1 second of the car ahead of you. It helps you gain a couple of kilometers an hour. It helps you with the speed, downforce, all that kind of fun stuff. Well, when you're looking at this race from second to 12th, it's a DRS train. These guys are so tuned in. These cars are so fast. There's such a small gap that everybody's in a DRS train. It makes it like that for, you know, about 20 some odd laps. People are trying to pass. They're trying their best to do this and that. And it works to a certain extent, and it doesn't at the same time. They're trying. They're putting pressure on each other. They're making it looking exciting. And then they just kind of end up going back into where they were before, which is in the DRS train. Fernando Alonso, pit lane start. It was quiet for him. It was very, very quiet for him. He got a bunch of stuff modified from his new upgrades, tweaked, repaired, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, pit lane start, really, really quiet race for him. Not really an exciting race for him. It was more of an information research type of race. 63 laps of information. Whether you win or not, it's very, very valuable for the teams. A lot of these teams are looking at this race kind of like that. Because there's not a whole lot of space to pass, I mean, unless you absolutely massively screw up your pit stops, which are 27 seconds long in this case from the beginning of the pit lane to the end, by the time you're done, it's about 27 seconds. That is the only kind of, you know, change in the grid that you're going to get. So unless you massively screw up your strategy, which a lot of these guys did not, it's going to stay the same. And for the first 56 laps, no, we'll call it 55 laps, it pretty much did. It was just proper pit stops. Finally, Alpine and Kick Sauber are getting the pit stops where they need to be. 2.7, 2.8 seconds. Again, they're not breaking any records, but they're still keeping up. They're still doing what they need to. It's getting the tires on, getting the tires off, and away we go. Now, I say that very tongue-in-cheek because there's always a race. There's a race where a pit stop is always horrible. And a driver gets screwed over. Either it's a DNF or it's a massive penalty. But for once, it wasn't Valtteri Bottas. There is no sympathy corner for him. For those of you who also listen to the race.com, there is no sympathy corner for Valtteri Bottas in the pit race or in the pit stop. It is Alex Albon's fault, or his turn at least. Lap 10, he goes in for a pit stop. The front right tire is not put on correctly. He ends up limping all the way around the track. He gets lapped by everybody. His race is officially done. He also, on top of that, gets a 10-second penalty for an unsafe release from the pit lanes. Not his fault. He was released on time. Everybody thought it was good. The last second reaction, if you watch the replays, is the front right-hand tire guy. He's trying to put it back on again, but Albon leaves. You can obviously see the tire isn't on straight enough. Massive safety hazard. Like I said, 10-second penalty. Alex Albon's day is officially done. He did pretty good in qualifying. Just, again, now you're just collecting data for the team itself. And it's super frustrating, but hey, it's racing. The only thing that would help Albon is if there was a red flag or if there was a full-on safety car that he might be able and might be allowed to unlap himself. He would still be last, but at least he wouldn't be a lap down. Unfortunately for him, no red car, no safety car either, or no red flag and no safety car. Lap 20, Checo Perez ends up hitting the gravel. Another sign of he's trying hard. Is he trying a little bit too hard for his skill level? No, probably not. Is he losing concentration and fighting the car just a little bit? Yeah, that's probably going to be more along that line. Not a massively successful day for Checo. Also not the most horrible day for Checo as well. I mean, he's not slow, but he's not really competing either. It's like you're trying, but it's not quite enough. It's a little painful to watch. You can tell he's on the precipice of either absolutely blowing the other teams out of the water and getting first for the rest of the year, or he's going to just not quite crash and burn, but he's just going to get slowly worse, and he's essentially going to drive himself out of a seat for Red Bull. He didn't stop until lap 38, one of the longest drivers, showing the fact that he does have good tire degradation control, that he can make these tires last as long as he needs them to. This race also was a one-stop strategy, just because the degradation from the track and how the tires are, you only needed one pit stop. At this point, they were thinking, well, if you pit him now, you kind of hope for a safety car or red flag. That way it'll put him in a better position for the rest of the race. It definitely did not happen. It definitely did not turn out that way. Again, he's kind of left in no man's land. It wasn't horrible, but it also wasn't exactly like earth-shatteringly amazing either. So the race is going all hunky-dory. In my opinion, really boring. One-stop pit stops. Everyone's on track. No drama. All this and all that. And then we start the last couple laps. So I'm going to call it lap 50. When I started to notice it was about 55 of 63. Max is well out front. So he's like 6 second lead ahead of Lando Norris. And it's going to be another super easy win. But then as you continue to watch, and it's not lap by lap, it's like during the lap, you see Lando Norris start to get closer and closer and closer. It's like, okay, so you're going to figure he's really pushing it. He wants to catch up. He's going to, air quotes, try to put pressure on Max, but he's so far ahead, there's no way it's going to happen. Well, then one lap goes by, and then two laps go by, and three laps go by, and all of a sudden, you're not 6 seconds ahead anymore. You are 4 seconds, now 3 seconds, now 2 seconds. By the time the final lap came, Lando Norris went from 6 seconds behind to 0.7 seconds. 0.07 of a second, he is now behind Max Verstappen. And now it's getting interesting. What the hell is going to happen? What's wrong with the Red Bull car? You can hear Max, you know, how much battery life do I have? I'm using everything the battery's got. I'm using everything the car has. He's visibly not concerned, not shaking, but he's getting a little worried that, like, what's going to happen? He's catching up that fast. Remember, McLaren brought in some upgrades. They didn't exactly bring in a whole lot. They only brought in two. So how good can these upgrades be to catch up to Max? Or how inefficient is the 5 upgrades that Red Bull brought, 2 of which are very track specific. Does this eliminate track specific upgrades? You just need to upgrade the car. Whole lot of questions are coming in. It was, oh my God, it was fantastic. It was the most exciting part of the race, of qualifying, of practice the entire weekend. Lando Norris pushed and pushed, and neither of them lost concentration. There was a little half a second here, half a second there for Lando, but it was more of you're pushing the tires so damn hard, and you have, I mean, like nine lap brand new tires compared to Max. Can 9 laps really make that big of a difference when it comes to grip? Absolutely, they can. And definitely in performance. Max's tires are done. He is past the graining stage for the second life. So when you get the tires, they're perfectly shiny, right? They're brand new. So as you drive, you get graining on the tires. Rubber builds up and comes off the tire. It's going through the grip, which is sometimes when you see the long camera angle of the cars coming towards you, you see a bunch of what looks to be black marbles on the side of the racetrack, and when you see the drivers are, that's rubber coming off the tires. That's graining that the tires go through. It's called the graining stage. Max has gone through the first graining stage. He is now into the second graining stage. If you run tires long enough, they kind of have a first life and a second life. But by the time you get into the second graining stage, your tire life is done. Like, you are officially, you hope this race is ending sooner than later. Lando has just gone through his first phase. 9 lap newer tires, and he is catching them and catching them and catching them. At this point, you could put a string between these two cars and they're moving at the exact same time, at the exact same speed, at the exact same angles. These guys are mirror images of each other. That's how close this race came to. It was fantastic. Unfortunately, if you're a McLaren fan, that is as close as you got. You got within 0.07 of a second by the time the race was done. Max does end up winning, but he absolutely had to pay attention. He was pushed from beginning to end. It was one of those finishes that you needed to see it live. I'm describing it as best as I can with the enthusiasm that it deserves that I can give to you. But if you haven't watched the last, call it even 2 laps of this race, you need to go and find it somewhere, whether it's on YouTube, whether you recorded it, whether you've got F1 TV and you just happen to miss the race, you need to go and watch the last 2 laps. It is pure racing joy. It is racing at its purest. 2 guys, cars at the top of their games, concentration maxed out. This is what racing is all about. It was the best end to this season that we've seen so far. 100% guaranteed. It doesn't matter what Monza looks like. It doesn't matter what Austin looks like. It doesn't matter what Silverstone looks like. This is going to be the best finish of the season. Meanwhile, while all of this is happening, Alex Albon's day just kind of goes from bad to worse. They end up pulling him. He pulls in the car, lap 54. He is the only DNF of the day. Victory goes to Max Verstappen. Massive disappointment goes to Lando Norris. He was disappointed that he didn't win, but at the same time, he's also elated to know how close McLaren's car officially is to the RB20 now. He also ends up winning Racer of the Day by like 36%. Congratulations to Lando Norris on that. It was a fantastic end to the race itself. Let's go through our top 10. This is how it finished from first to 10th. Let's get into it. Max Verstappen first, Lando Norris second, Leclerc in third, Piastri in fourth, Carlos Sainz in fifth, Hamilton in sixth, Russell in seventh, Perez in eighth, Lance Stroll in ninth, and Yuki Tsunoda 10th. I love seeing this. Carlos Sainz, his season at the end of it, he has no job as of right now. And he's still not only in the top 10, he's pushing top 5. And he was pushing Piastri, who got that grid penalty. He gained 1 spot and finished, you know, in fourth instead of fifth. It wasn't exactly a shocking race or a stellar race from the top 10 guys. They were just the most consistent. You kind of finish where you started, but still having Carlos Sainz move down, but just stay consistent. Hamilton was right on him. Mercedes had another really good, consistent weekend. Again, they haven't broken the top 5. But you see the developmental cycle going in the right direction for them, which is very encouraging for not only Toto Wolff, but for George Russell and for the team itself. So congratulations to them. Yuki Tsunoda, I mean, he was on point as much as he could be driving that V carb the entire weekend. Top 10 gets at least 1 point. That's great for RB. They need these points in the Constructors' Championships. Drivers' Championships, let's get into that now. Max is still on top, healthy, with 161 points. There is a switch with Leclerc's third place and Checo Perez's eighth place. They officially switch. Leclerc is in second with 113 points. Checo drops down to third with 107. Lando Norris is in fourth with 101. Carlos Sainz is in fifth with 96. Oscar Piastri is in sixth with 53. George Russell's in seventh with 44 points. Lewis Hamilton with his sixth place jumps Fernando Alonso. He is now in eighth spot with 35 points. Fernando Alonso drops down to ninth with 33 points. And Yuki Tsunoda cracks the top 10 once again with 15 points. Driver or Constructors Championships, nothing has changed really. Red Bull is still in first with 268 points. Ferrari's in second with 212. McLaren's in third with 154 points. Mercedes in fourth with 79 points. Aston Martin's in fifth with 44 points. The V Carbs are in sixth with 20 points. Haas is in seventh with 7 points. Alpine is eighth with 1 point. And 1 point. 1 point. 1 point. And ninth and tenth are taken up by Williams and Kvyat, respectively, both with 0 points. Now, I've had a couple questions going, why are teams not just tied for last place when it comes to 0 points? A very good question. Let me explain. The way that F1 does it is if you have multiple teams that have 0 points, they are ranked according to how the cars finish. So between Kvyat and Williams in this case, Logan Sargeant finished higher than Valtteri Bottas and Zhou Guanyu. That's why Williams is in ninth and Kvyat is in 10th. If they, let's say Alpine, Williams, and Kvyat were there, Alpine would be placed in eighth spot because their driver's placed higher. Whether you're getting points or not, it's still the grading system. If you place higher, you're going to have a higher spot, whether your team is getting points or not. So hopefully that clears everything up. Same with the driver's championships. Let's say there's two drivers that are tied with points. For instance, let's say Oscar Piastri and George Russell. By the end of the season, they're tied. They have the same amount of points. The standings will reflect which driver got higher positions more often. So let's say Piastri finishes sixth and Russell finishes seventh. That's because more often than not, Piastri was in a higher position at the end of the race than Russell. Vice versa, if Russell finished higher than Piastri during the season, but they got the same points, Russell would be higher than Piastri just because he placed higher more often. Now we move to the story of the race. Well, you can probably guess in which direction I'm going. It's been a theme the last couple races, and I think it's going to be definitely a theme for this entire 2024 season. I don't want to call it legendary comeback because it's not a comeback. I want to come up with something that sounds cool, but essentially it's the domination over the rest of the grid by McLaren. They are no longer a top five team. They're a top three team. As the constructors show, I mean, they're third. They're catching Ferrari pretty damn fast, and they're leaving Mercedes in the dust pretty damn fast. Even if it's a bad weekend, they're going to be good from Mercedes. They are the giant killers of the 2024 season. They have officially shown their teeth. They've shown what they can do. And with a minimal amount of upgrades, they're challenging the three-time Constructors' Championship team. And not only are they challenging them, this race especially, they're making it look quite easy. They're not looking like, oh, this was a lucky race, and that if it was anywhere else, we wouldn't have been able to do this. It was on their own merit. The upgrades are working. They've taken the time. They're not going overboard. It's piece by piece, but the pieces make sense. I would rather, if I was the owner of a team, I would rather have the developmental path that McLaren has opposed to what Aston Martin has. You throw 9 pieces on the car, brand new. Congratulations, that's great. Do they actually work? In this case, no, not really. Massive, massive disappointment for Aston Martin with that much development thrown in for this race. McLaren, on the other hand, you got 2 pieces, but they make sense and they work in harmony with the rest of the car. And now harmony is equaling dominance, which is equaling challenging to the championship team. they will beat Red Bull more times this year. McLaren will be on podium more times this year than they were last year. Max Verstappen will be getting second and third more times this season. And this is coming from a Red Bull fan. I love Red Bull. I've loved them since Toro Rosso. The history behind it, the team I love. But you got to be realistic about this. McLaren is coming up like there is no tomorrow. They are the rising tide, and they will sink ships. They will sink Red Bull this year. Will Red Bull win the Constructors' Championships at this rate? I have absolutely no idea. They've got a stranglehold at the beginning of the season. They did last year. But will the upgrades that Adrian Newey is bringing be helpful enough to contain that lead and to sustain that lead? Ferrari will get passed by McLaren sooner rather than later. By mid-season, I predict that McLaren will be the number two team in Formula One. Drivers' Championships, you're seeing the change already. Will Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri crack the top five? Norris is already in the top five. I see him overpassing Perez by next race. Monaco is coming up next. Norris is going to out-qualify Perez. They're going to kill it. And all of a sudden, Perez is going to be fourth. Oscar Piastri, the way he's going, he's only 43 points behind Carlos Sainz for fifth. The way he's driving, I also see him in the top five for the end of the season. Red Bull's got to watch out, or they will be thrown faster than they gained their first championship and faster than their dominance began. It's going to be a very, very, very interesting season. And that, folks, is the wrap-up for the Imola Grand Prix. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Next race is the Monaco Grand Prix, the 24th and 26th of May. It is this coming up weekend. If you want to watch full practice 1 and 2, it is Friday. It is a regular weekend. Full practice 1 is at 5:30. Practice 2 is at 9 a.m. Saturday, full practice 3 is at 4:30 a.m. Qualifying is at 8 a.m. So for those of us on Saturday who are going to get up and watch it live, like myself, 8 a.m. is not exactly the earliest to get up, so it should be a easy time to get up. Watch it live. I highly recommend it. Sunday pre-race show is at 6 a.m. The race itself is 7 a.m. our time for the Monaco Grand Prix. Will it be an exciting race? With my heart, I want to say yes. Realistically, absolutely not. Monaco is such a narrow track. I think there's only one place to pass. The reason why you watch the Monaco Grand Prix, and this is horrible to say, but it's true, you watch for people who misjudge the corners and they hit the wall. And then it's going to be a safety car. And then you're going to see who springs into the pit lanes first, and that's going to be your winner. It's a one-stop race, I believe, one or two-stop race at the most, but there's no passing. There's one place to pass in Monaco, and that's pretty much it. So, will it be an exciting weekend? I really hope so. Will the weather be perfect? As always, it will be. Could you literally and logistically afford and realistically afford to miss the first half of the race? In my opinion, yeah, you could. But all of this is a different conversation for a different time. And as always, I'd like to send out a huge thank you for all my listeners. And until next time, keep those tires burning and the rubber burning. Thanks, everybody.